And imagine if you're just driving a Winnebago. I mean, those things go, what, 60 miles an hour? They don't get great gas mileage. But right. On a phone line is Brian Hazelton, Senior Vice President of Winnebago Industries. We wanted to connect with somebody that makes these kinds of things as we roll through spring and into summer, because I know a lot of folks are interested in summer trips, and who better than somebody from Winnebago to talk about that. Hey, Brian, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks a lot for having me on.
You don't have any spaceships out there, do you?
No, I was trying to figure out how we were going to transition this from Mars and spaceships into Winnebago.
I think we've done that ably. So where are you guys located? Where do you make Winnebagos?
The motorhome division is located in Forest City, Iowa, which is about 2 hours south of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And that's where the company originated some 63-plus years ago.
What else do you have?
We have four facilities in the Forest City, Charles City, Lake Mills, and then Waverly areas. And then our Winnebago Towables business is outside of South Bend, Indiana, in Middlebury, Indiana.
This is the zone, right? Elkhart, Indiana, and Iowa, right through there. I wonder why it is that this is the place where these sorts of things get made.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there was a lot of automotive history, many, many years ago that kind of spread from Detroit into that Elkhart area, a lot of famous brands. But yeah, it's become the capital for RVs. And then Winnebago, you know, we've really established our identity in North Iowa, and I'm very, very proud of the heritage and the workforce that we have had for a number of years there.
How many folks work at Winnebago now?
In the total Winnebago Industries group, it's over 5,000. And the Winnebago RV side, it's just about 2,000 teammates throughout those two regions.
How busy are you guys these days?
Tremendously busy. John, we were busy before the pandemic hit. We were having a good year. And then in the March timeframe, obviously reacted similarly to a lot of other businesses in trying to understand what was happening, how to protect our employees, what that meant for the business. We ended up shutting down our facilities. And then about the mid-May timeframe, it got crazy. And I think as people were unsure as to how they could travel, how they could get away with their family, get away from some of the chaos that was becoming the new day-to-day, the RV lifestyle became an environment that you can control. You can decide where you go, where you stay. Mm-hmm. You're not dependent on somebody else to maintain the environment for you. And so it was the orders that we saw and that the entire industry saw from May forward. It's just been a tremendous, tremendous increase and a lot of challenges, with the supply chain side of our business that we're getting better and better at adapting to. We've got a very good group of supply partners we work with. But just the way that our employees have managed through this with all the different protocols, in and out of the facilities, trying to keep everybody safe. It's been a chaotic 12 months, to say the least, but we're very fortunate. We're in one of the industries that has seen an uptick in business, from the pandemic. Not everyone has been so fortunate, we realize.
Well, I was wondering about really, that. Did you see it coming?
Yeah.
Did you anticipate that? Like when this thing hit and even when you shut down, did you go, I know what's going to happen? People are going to come back. They're going to be hunkered down. They're going to want to get out. We will be the solution. I mean, were you anticipating the growth?
To be honest, late March, no. As we started to get into March and into April, and a lot of our dealers were saying there's a lot of demand. People were home. They're on their laptop. They're configuring the RV they've always wanted. So we saw a lot of that traffic start to pick up. And then the states were all reopening in different ways. So some of the states that started open early, we definitely started to see the demand. We had several of our bigger dealers that noticed their internet traffic was substantially higher than it had been. So you've got some dealer partners that have seen these types of issues, nothing to this extent, but have seen slowdowns that really started to give us the heads up of, hey, there's a ton of interest out there. So by the time we got to early May, we could smell that something was coming.
Yeah. So now it's still good? People are still interested in Winnebagos?
It still is, yeah, John. It's very good. The demand has continued to increase really since that last May timeframe. A lot of people that are new to the lifestyle, especially when you start looking at the leadership position we have in the Class B, the van life movement is huge. When you start looking at in areas like lithium technology now that we're bringing as a substitution to diesel, so a smaller carbon footprint product, there's just, you know, there's a whole new segment that we're seeing come into the RV lifestyle.
I want to ask you about some of these vehicles. Like, here's my offer to you. Sell me one. We'll pause here and I'll let you do it. But I mean, when I think of Winnebago, and you've already dissuaded me of this, there's towables, there's van size, but I think of something that's 40 feet long and has a bowling alley.
And Winnebago, that's the heritage, is what you're referring to as a Class A product, which can be on either a diesel or a gas chassis. And that's been the traditional, you know, sweet spot, I would say, for a lot of our consumers. But as people have entered the market, they're looking at shorter coaches. There's definitely a theme that way, especially as you want to explore our great national parks. Staying under 35 feet is typically where a lot of our consumers will go. But then also you're seeing a lot of people new to the lifestyle, and they're just more comfortable in a van-based or in a Class C, which would be a little bit bigger but not quite as big as a Class A product. So they're a little more comfortable getting started out in that, starting out in that size range. We're continuing to see, the female demographic for us has been huge. A lot of single parents, single moms, and they're, you know, very comfortable getting started in that type of product as well. But it's, you know, for the one of the great things about Winnebago is we can do what you just said. We can start at a travel trailer that's $20,000, and we can go up to a luxury Class A diesel motorhome that's going to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on what you want to do. But we've looked at it as from a customer experience standpoint. What do you want to do outdoors? We have people that want to go do a triathlon, go kayaking. They may just want to, you know, they want to go to a national park and be with their friends around a campfire. They may want to go tailgate at a Bears game. They might want to just have something that they can use as a daily driver. We're seeing that in some of the van products as well.
Boy, that at a tail, boy, that sounds like fun, doesn't it? Get one of these bad boys at a tailgate, pull up with that thing, have the grill going. You've got water. You've got a bathroom. You've got a bed and a TV and a shower and the bowling alley. Okay, well, just sell me a little more. and I am intrigued a little by the price and the trend. We're talking about Winnebagos. Maybe you've got a question, too. 312-981-7200, Brian Hazelton, Senior Vice President of Winnebago Industries, is on a phone line. Our neighbors in Iowa and Indiana make these things. We're talking to Brian Hazelton from Winnebago. He's the Senior Vice President of Winnebago Industries. Brian, you mentioned a moment ago sort of the cost range on these Winnebagos. You said $20,000 and then on up into the six figures. If money were no object, and I'm not a country music star, but I'm just a retired couple with some money, and rather than buying a lake house, I'm going to buy one of your things. What am I looking at there?
It depends on the product, John, that you want to get into and what you want to do with it. You know, we have, as we were saying earlier, we've got a lot of people that just, you know, want something that enables them to go do a certain activity. We've got other people that live full time. You know, they've retired. They'll get a larger Class A motorhome. You know, those that the diesels will be up in the $400,000 range. The towable, as I mentioned, will start in that $20,000 range. Some of the van products, depending on the features and the chassis choice that you make, will be in that $115,000 range. Mm-hmm. So it really depends upon the use scenario for the customer. You know, we've tried to get away from just building a specific class of product and really understand something we call the demand landscape as to how our customers use the product. But it runs the gamut, you know, $20,000 on the low end up to $400,000-ish on that Class A diesel.
If I went with the midsize, you said that those vans are pretty popular these days, and I understand why, both price point and drivability, and maybe I don't need to live in the thing. I just want to be comfortable and have fun. So then how big is that? Is that the size of a family's van that I'd get at my local Chevy dealership, or is it bigger than that?
No, it's typically, it's built on a van chassis. You know, we use products from Mercedes-Benz. We use the FCA product as well, and then also with Ford. So it's the typical, they'll supply that product in the cargo van industry, and then we'll take that shell and then completely customize it as an RV in our facilities.
Yeah.
So similar sized.
What are the features that people like in these things? I presume they have kitchenettes and water, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's going to depend on, you know, the vans are going to be, obviously, you're fighting with space there compared to the larger diesel motorhomes. But the diesel motorhomes, you're looking at, you know, full kitchens, stainless steel appliances, electric fireplaces, heated floors in some of the units, you know, large showers, typically to what you'd see in a lot of residential. We've really focused on traditional interiors, mimicking what everybody's seeing on HGTV and such. And then in terms of, you know, what we're seeing more and more of is off-the-grid capabilities. So especially, it gets back to our conversation on the pandemic, as people started to look at the RV lifestyle and they were working from home, and a lot of their children might not have been in in-room class sessions at school, it was very easy to work from the road. So we saw a big uptick in that, and that's driving, you know, Wi-Fi connectability, right? Lithium battery technology. It's not to the powertrain point yet. That will come. But in terms of having, typically you had a diesel or a gas-powered generator, we're now going to lithium batteries. We've had solar capabilities for a number of years. So that's one of the big areas that we're really seeing is trying to, you know, reduce that carbon footprint with a more eco-friendly type of power system.
Do I have Wi-Fi in these things?
You absolutely have Wi-Fi.
And internet capability, and can I watch TV? I mean, I can't watch cable TV. Yep. You got a cable.
You can watch DirecTV.
Yeah, right,
we have satellite TV providers that, you know, we upfit the units to. Our dealer partners will do the same thing based upon what you want to do. But, no, absolutely. And most of the units, you can have the big diesel units, you've got 3 and 4 TVs. You've got an outdoor kitchen on a lot of these. Our unit's big outdoor 50-inch TV. So, yeah, back to the tailgate conversation. You know, it's a pretty good way to spend the day, you know, sitting outside with family and friends. You've got the kitchen there. You've got the TV there. You know, full stereo systems and such outside as well.
Barb, you had a question. You're on WGN. Hi, Barb. What do you need to know?
Hi, John. I'm just interested in rental. My husband and I have toyed with the idea of buying, but honestly, I'd like to test it out. And is it more cost effective for multiple weeks, or just give us a range of about, you know, what does it cost to maybe rent something for a week or maybe two?
Yeah, it's a great question, Barb, and it's something that numerous people do. They will. It's the try before you buy. And there are a number of rental companies out there. We do not rent product as Winnebago, but a number of our dealers maintain a fleet of product that they will rent. And then there's also companies that strictly play in that rental market. And there's also, you know, the peer-to-peer environment is something we're seeing similar to what we saw with Airbnb. But there's a number of peer-to-peer RV sites that are showing up where people are putting their products now out on that shared site for others to be able to utilize. But it's a great idea. If you're interested, you know, try it out, see what you like, because you're going to find size, configuration, twin beds, master bed. There's so many variables. It's a great way to just get yourself indoctrinated before you spend the money.
Sure. I mean, just ballpark, could you give me an idea of, you know, what it would cost to, you know, rent something comfortable that we could...
For a week. Would it be $1,000? Would it be $2,000? You have a clue about that, Brian. What do you think? I know it depends on the size as well.
Yeah. John, I'd be guessing. I would say somewhere in that $1,000, and I'm sure there'll be two more callers telling me I'm wrong in about 3 minutes.
Well, somebody
but that
call,
would just
yeah.
be a ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah, keep
okay.
listening.
But Barb,
go ahead, Brian.
Barb, if you're going to go down this path, I would do it sooner than later because as we're seeing, you know, our dealers have a tough time right now with inventory given the demand, and the rental providers are saying the same thing.
John, ask him how the campgrounds being closed has affected things. I want to buy a camper like this, but I am waiting for the campgrounds to open. Has that been an issue this spring?
We're hearing more and more of that. There's just a lot. Number one, there's a lot of demand of people that haven't utilized the RV lifestyle before and just not realizing that, you know, it's a little different than calling up and booking a hotel for the next day. The campgrounds in this country, we have some incredible national parks. State parks are fantastic. I know you've got Starved Rock there in Illinois.
Yeah.
But there's just the infrastructure, and we're really hopeful. There's been a number of bills that have gotten through Congress that are going to enable more funding. We have a strong partnership with the National Parks Foundation. We donate money based on a certain limited edition product that we had produced for each unit. But that's going to continue to be a big challenge that we need to address in this country is the availability of parks, but also the infrastructure that's in. Because you talked about Wi-Fi. When people go to their campground, they want to be off the grid, but they want to show you what they're doing on Instagram at the same time. So there's connectivity is going to continue to be a big driver.
Well, good luck to you guys, Brian. I'm not surprised to hear things are going well. I'm glad these are produced in the Midwest, and I hope everybody has a great summer, maybe in one of these things. Thanks for visiting with us, and let's connect down the road.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you reaching out. Have a great day.
Yeah, he's the Senior Vice President at Winnebago Industries.